Are you ready to hear the most common plant-based myths debunked? Things such as soy, iron deficiency, and where to get our protein from? Well, Dr. Matthew Nagra does an amazing job on today's episode explaining the science behind why these myths aren't true. Stay tuned. So here's the big question. How do you heal your eczema for good? How do you get to the point where you're comfortable in your own skin and aren't embarrassed to show it off? How do you stop using creams and medications that only work for a short while and find a long-term solution? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answer. My name is Jocelyn Diaz, and welcome to the Eczema Free Journey Podcast. Hey guys, Jocelyn jumping in here again. I wanted to let you know that today's episode is sponsored by Audible. If you haven't heard of Audible, it's the easiest way to listen to audiobooks. If you don't have Audible currently, you can get a free audiobook today and a 30-day free trial to Audible as well. If you don't like it, you can cancel before the 30 days are up and you still get to keep the book, which is what I love. They don't just take it away from you. They have so many titles, including several of the medical medium's books, including his newest one, Cleanse to Heal. So the audiobooks are amazing for busy moms. We're constantly on the move, right? Well, with Audible, you don't have to sit down and read a book. You can be driving, moving, bathing the kids, taking a shower, exercising. You can pretty much be doing it all as us moms normally do. Another great thing about Audible is the ability to listen across several devices without losing your spot. I don't know about you, but I hate when I lose my spot in a book. And with Audible, you don't gotta worry about that. Get your free audiobook and start your free 30-day Audible trial by going to audibletrial.com/eczema-free. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/eczema-free. Alrighty, hope you enjoyed today's episode. We're about to jump into today's podcast, but before we do, I wanted to share something with you. If you're looking to get your child eating better, I have something to help and it is completely free. After struggling for way too long trying to get my two kids under 4 years old to eat more fruits and veggies, I finally discovered 8 key ways to improve their eating and I wanted to give it to you. Why? Because I know the struggle and I don't want you to have to go through that any longer. So I am sharing something that I've tested myself. These methods are what has worked for me. They're surprisingly simple and effective, which is why I thought you could really benefit from it. If this sounds like something you'd be interested in, download your copy now at theeczemafreejourney.com/eat. That's theeczemafreejourney.com/eat. All right, now that that's off my chest, let's get to that podcast I told you about. Hello, Healing Nation. Welcome to the Eczema Free Journey Podcast. My name is Jocelyn Diaz, and today I'm talking with naturopathic doctor Matthew Nagra. Dr. Nagra is a passionate advocate for evidence-based nutrition as medicine. And after struggling with various health issues throughout his childhood, he turned to a plant-based diet, which improved nearly every health concern that he had. Dr. Nagra is a volunteer for the nonprofit NutritionFacts.org. He's a soon-to-be author, and he has been consuming a plant-based diet for nearly 10 years. He aims to educate others on how they too can improve their health like he did years ago. Now, today we're going to be talking about plant-based nutrition and chronic disease, as well as common myths around plant-based diets. Welcome, Dr. Nagra, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, I'm looking forward to chatting with you. But before we get into that, I'd like to ask, what is one fun fact about you that no one really knows about?
Well, my friends, family, and them, obviously, they'll know. But for listeners, I once traveled to England from Vancouver for a day to be in an AC/DC music video. And then I flew straight home and wrote my exams that following week. So I spent about 24 hours traveling total and about 24 hours in London total.
Wow. That is definitely a first. So how was that experience being in the AC/DC video?
It was awesome. I'm actually in two of them. I did another one down in Los Angeles later that same year or the next year.
And yeah, how did you come about that? Like how did, I don't even know where that would begin. But how did you?
So my family, we've actually known the guys in the band for a while now. We've known them. My dad first met them in like 96 and then, subsequently tour after tour, kind of hung out with them a little bit. And then I met them when I was a kid back in 2008. And just kind of known them ever since. And so, you know, eventually this opportunity to come up, to be in a music video came up, and I had to take it. They're my favorite band of all time. And it was a pretty cool experience. Yeah, I was awake for, I think, 30 hours straight, because I got there and then I had to film the video and I had to study on the plane because I had exams that week. So yeah, it was a mess. But
sounds like an exciting time.
Yeah, definitely worth it.
Very cool. Thanks for sharing them, Matt. That's definitely a first.
Yeah.
But very cool to learn about. Awesome. I love it, Matt. So, alrighty. So now we're going to jump into the kind of the nitty gritty of the podcast. And mm-hmm. I'd like to kind of start with, where did this plant-based journey begin for you?
Funny, it was around that time that I first met ACDC, actually. not that there's any correlation, but again, I was about 15, back in, I think it was 2008. And I had a personal trainer who really, you know, pushed more plant-based kind of diet. Wasn't like strictly plant-based or anything, but mostly plant-based. And as a child, I was, you know, overweight, had asthma, allergies, had some health concerns. And he wanted me, my personal trainer wanted me to write down everything I ate for a couple of weeks, to do like a food diary, which I'm sure you've spoken about before on this podcast. And I was kind of terrified that he would see how bad my diet was. And you know, like the workouts already sucked. So I could just imagine how much worse it would be once he knew how bad I was eating. And so I thought for, you know, the next couple of weeks or whatever, I would just clean up my diet, eat super clean, and like just impress him, right, with this food diary, which isn't what we want to do. We want to see what you're eating typically. But I did that. So I cut out dairy. I cut out a lot of the more classic sort of junk foods, you know, pops, potato chips, and all that. And my skin started clearing up. I was losing weight. I just felt better. My asthma got way better. I just noticed all these significant improvements. And then, you know, once this happened, I was like, okay, maybe he's been on to something this whole time. He's been trying to push me to change up my diet. And so I stuck with it. And I stuck with that for the next couple of years. And during that time, I kept learning more and more. I was learning about, you know, more plant-based foods, raw foods, like all sorts of things like that. And when I was in university in my first year, a few years later there, I finally jumped in 100% plant-based in my my second semester at UVic. And you have been ever since.
Wow, interesting story. So that it's interesting to see how it was actually you taking action and starting to feel better that you went out. So what was the window from like when you began to change your foods till you started to actually see a difference in your health?
Oh, it was like immediate. It was like, because I only did that trial, you know, because I had to record my food intake for, I think it was 2 weeks. I can't remember 100%, but I'm pretty sure it was about 2 weeks. So it was within that 2 week period that I started to notice improvement.
Wow, that's incredible. That's interesting that you were able to see such quick improvements. And that's really interesting. Do you ever happen to like miss your old eating habits?
No, not at all. Because I think that's something that a lot of people get stuck on, is they'll think about what they'll be giving up. You know, I'll be giving up all my favorite, my, you know, burgers and pizzas and all that. Well, actually you won't, because you could still eat plant-based versions of all those. But you also learn about so many new foods. Like now I know how to cook tofu in a million different ways that tastes amazing. I've learned about all these different exotic fruits and things I never would have, like durian, for example, which is a controversial one. Some people love it, some people hate it. I love it. And then, you know, just all these different recipes, cookbooks. It's crazy. You open yourself up to this world of other food ideas that you just otherwise never would have noticed. And if you ask most people who have gone plant-based or vegan, you'll probably find that their diet is more diverse now than it was previously. I find that a lot.
That's very interesting. So what is one common obstacle that you see? Because it kind of sounded like that was something that people often go through. Do you have something that you always hear people going through that can make the transition to a more plant-based style kind of more difficult?
Obstacles. I think actually not so much with like food options nowadays anyway, because every restaurant's got options, right? It's super common. I think the big one is just socially, or social gatherings and family and that. I mean, there's kind of a lack of understanding or appreciation from family members a lot of the time. Or, I mean, I was lucky to have the support of my family members, but not everybody has that. And then, you know, going out with friends. I know my sister, she more recently transitioned over too, and I know she gets a lot of, you know, comments from work colleagues and friends and that, and she'll just message me and I'll have to tell her what to say in response, like that kind of thing. So I know that people deal with that. I think that's number one, but that's where education comes in. And that's actually why one of the big reasons why I ended up learning as much as I did about nutrition and why I was so driven to is because I wanted to have these answers, whether it's necessary or not. I mean, I hated, you know, someone asking me something and me not knowing, you know, why I'm doing a certain thing or being able to explain adequately why. Aside from, you know, I feel great, which is should be reason enough. You know, knowing all the stats behind the longevity of, you know, plant-based eaters and the lower risk of cardiovascular and you know, cancer incidents and that kind of stuff. So I think it all comes down to education, and that just takes time.
Interesting. Well, do you have somewhere that you would guide, like someone just starting out, where they can start getting educated and getting more informed?
Yeah. So there's a few good resources. One of the ones that I like to recommend, especially for like specific nutrients, if you're worried about that, would be Vegan RD. I can't remember if it's veganrd.com or .org. I just have it bookmarked, but it's one of those okay, two.
I'll look into it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really good. And then I actually volunteer for nutritionfacts.org, which it might still focus on nutrients and that too, but it's a lot more focused on the chronic disease aspect and other health outcomes related to nutrition. Overall, pretty good resource there as well, although I am slightly biased because I volunteer for them. And then the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, so PCRM.org, or they have a free app as well, has a 21-day vegan kickstart. And this is essentially like a meal plan. It's a 21-day meal plan. Overall, very healthy recipes. They provide all the nutrition facts as well. And I like to provide that to people because it's free and it gives, you know, some more food ideas if people are looking for it. So there you've got making sure you're hitting all your nutrient needs. You've got some of the data about the health impacts of plant-based diets. And then you've got some recipe ideas there as well.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's definitely important to get informed. And those sound like amazing resources that I myself am going to check out. So thank you. Hey, Healing Nation. I have to interrupt this episode for a second because I have something I could not wait to share with you. I'm so excited. We've all been a part of the story where we use cream after cream trying to moisturize our dry and painful eczema and nothing helps. If anything, they all hurt or stink, so we either end up putting up with the pain, thinking that it's normal, which it's not, or we stop using cream altogether, which is actually where I ended up, and it's not any better. Can you relate to any of those? Well, luckily, I stumbled upon a company called Gladskin, and they immediately caught my attention, and here's why. Gladskin's focus is not on masking the symptoms of eczema, but instead on balancing the skin's microbiome. The same way that we're changing what we eat to help balance our gut microbiome, Gladskin uses their patented endolysin called Microbalance to balance the skin's microbiome. So what does this mean? In simple terms, we all have good and bad bacteria on our skin, but the eczema flare-ups and the irritation happen when there's more bad bacteria than good. So after learning the science behind Gladskin, I immediately got in contact with them to try it myself. And after just a few days of using it, my eczema wasn't dry and cracked anymore. And the best part, you wanna know what it is? It never hurt or stung. I even use it on my kids and I saw even more improvement on their eczema. It was almost gone within days. Not only did I find a cream that didn't hurt, but I also found a cream that helped restore the balance on my skin. So not only am I able to heal from the inside out, but now I'm healing from the outside in. It's amazing. So if you're anyone you know has eczema, I highly recommend you get a bottle of Gladskin. Simply go to gladskin.com to get yours now. That's gladskin.com. You will not regret it, guys. Alrighty, back to the podcast. There are so many different myths going around about plant-based nutrition. So I'd like to know, what would you say are like your top three that you hear most often?
Number one is definitely that you won't get enough protein. Number two is probably about like iron deficiency or concerns around iron. And then three would be, not that you need to eat soy if you're on a plant-based diet, but is that like there are a lot of concerns about soy food. So those are probably the three topics that come up most often for me.
Okay, so then with protein, that's a very common thing. You're not getting enough protein because you're not eating meat. What would you say about that?
Yeah, so there's a few things to consider. The first claim, and I'll just tackle that real quick, is that plants don't contain all of the essential amino acids. So proteins are built from amino acids. They're comprised of amino acids that when we eat protein, we break it down into those individual amino acids, and then we absorb them and we, you know, use them to produce proteins in our body. So there's this thought that plants don't contain all of them. That is actually not true. Plants do contain all of the essential amino acids. All plants do. The only food that doesn't, that's actually lacking one, is gelatin or collagen, which is funny because that's a really heavily marketed supplement these days. But plants do contain amino acids in varying amounts. So some will be lower in certain amino acids, higher in others, and then other foods will have the opposite kind of profile. And that's, whole grains like rice and then beans actually have pretty, you know, opposite kind of profiles. However, we don't eat just one food, right? We combine foods. And you don't even have to worry about combining at a specific meal. Over the course of the day, if you're eating different sources of food, you're going to hit all of your amino acid needs. You're going to get a variety of amino acids. So this idea that you need to, you know, worry about eating your rice with your beans and all these combining, it doesn't matter. Unless you're eating like one food all day and nothing else, then you can run into problems. But obviously we don't advocate for that. The other claim is that plant proteins aren't as digestible or bioavailable as animal protein. And this is based on two scales, typically. One of them is known as the PDCAS, Protein Digestibility Corrected Amino Acid Score. And then there's the DAS score, which is the Digestible Indispensable Amino Acid Score. So mouthful, you don't need to know that. Now, the PDCAS finds that plant-based proteins are of a lower digestibility compared to animal-based. However, what they do is they feed foods, specific individual foods, so again, they aren't looking at a varied diet, to rodents, and then they see how much protein comes out the other end. So the amount that went in minus the amount that came out equals the amount that was absorbed. A couple problems there. For one, we aren't rats. Two, they're using individual foods. Again, that wouldn't apply to, as far as amino acid balance and that. And then the third issue is that you're looking at what happens through the entire digestive tract, where our bacteria in our colon actually digest some protein. So it can give kind of a false sense of how much you're actually getting there and how much is actually being digested by your bacteria rather than yourself. So then there's the DAS score. Same idea. They feed foods to actually pigs in this case, because they're more similar to humans. And they actually insert a tube through the side of the abdomen into the end of the small intestine. So it gets rid of the whole colonic bacteria digestion that happens. Again, same deal. They do find a little bit of a difference. But the other issue that both of these run into is that they use just raw foods. And we don't eat legumes raw, for example, right? We cook them. Cooking them increases digestion or digestibility. So we have what's called true ileal digestibility, which can be done in humans. And we have some small amount of data on this digestibility in humans. And when we look at that, there is a very small difference. It differs by a few percent total. That is really negligible when it comes to over, unless you're just barely skidding the bare minimum requirements of what you need, that is absolutely unnecessary to worry about. So when it comes to humans, the digestibility is incredibly minimal. There might be some foods that are lower. Most of them are going to be pretty similar. And if you're eating an overall varied diet, you're going to get all the protein you need. So that is the protein myth kind of debunked right there. I know that's a lot of information, but you can just play it back a couple times. If you
No, that's good. Yeah.
And then what was the second one? Oh, iron. Okay. So vegans and vegetarians are not at higher risk of iron deficiency compared to meat eaters. That's a complete myth. The data consistently shows that deficiency rates are similar. There's a couple of reasons. For one, vegans actually eat way more iron than meat eaters on average. And so even if the absorption of iron from plant sources is lower, you're eating so much more that it ends up compensating. The second thing is, when we look at plant-based iron sources, which contain non-heme iron, and then we look at animal-based iron sources, which contain heme iron, there is a difference in absorption there. The heme iron is very, in animal foods is very consistently absorbed. So you get a consistent amount of absorption there. With the non-heme iron and plant sources, it varies a lot. So, you know, if you're low, if your iron stores are low, you'll ramp up absorption, you'll get more of it. If your iron stores are topped up, you'll absorb less. And so our body balances that because too much iron is actually a bad thing. It can be very inflammatory, oxidative, it can increase disease risk, and actually heme iron from animal sources is associated with increased risk of cardiovascular disease, certain forms of cancer, type 2 diabetes, and so on. Now, if you eat plant-based irons with vitamin C sources, so bell peppers, citrus fruits, broccoli, and that, you actually boost absorption quite significantly. And so if you're low in iron and you eat iron-rich foods, which leads to a higher absorption, and you add vitamin C to the mix to further boost absorption, the absorption is very similar to what you would get from heme iron or meat sources. So again, there's not really much cause for concern there because we're not just going to eat, at least I hope not, not just going to eat an iron-rich food without, you know, some of these other foods that are rich in vitamin C. I mean, plant foods are so rich in vitamin C. It would be almost difficult to design a meal where you're not getting vitamin C there. You can also boost absorption with onion and garlic as well, which are very commonly used in plant-based cooking. So again, the iron concern is really overblown. And then the last one was soy. And soy gets a bad rap for a few reasons. There's this idea that soy contains phytoestrogens, which kind of mimic estrogen in the body. They have a similar structure and can bind to some of the same receptors. And that leads to an estrogenic response and increased breast cancer risk and that. Well, actually, these phytoestrogens are 1/1000th the strength of our own estrogens. So they're very weak estrogens. They also preferentially bind to different receptors, special receptors called beta receptors, which have different effects in our body. For example, in bone tissue, it has an estrogenic effect, where it's good because you want estrogen activity on bone to maintain bone mineral density, and soy does decrease risk of osteoporosis. But then in breast tissue, it can have an anti-estrogenic effect. And so with that anti-estrogenic effect, you actually decrease risk of breast cancer. And that's what we see. All of the large-scale studies that have been done in humans show that you reduce risk of breast cancer. Even women who have gene mutations that place them at higher risk of breast cancer reduce their breast cancer risk. And people who are currently battling or have survived breast cancer reduce their breast cancer risk if they eat more soy. On top of that, there was actually what we call an umbrella review of meta-analyses on soy. So they took 114 meta-analyses. Now, meta-analyses are where they compile all the data on a given topic. So soy and breast cancer, or soy and ovarian cancer, or soy and cardiovascular disease, and they compile it all together. So this study compiled 114 of those compilations, essentially. It's like all the data on soy we have, period. It was released this year, and they found that it reduced the risk of breast cancer, ovarian cancer, I think endometrial cancer was in there, cardiovascular disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes, prostate cancer, and I'm missing a whole bunch of the outcomes. Gastric cancer was another one. So the data on soy is so overwhelmingly positive that I actually don't know how someone can make a case for it being harmful. Now, the other concern that people will bring up is that, well, it's GMO and that's going to cause issues. And I mean, there isn't really any evidence of that. But even then, the soy that we eat as humans is not GMO. The GM soy is produced to feed to livestock. In fact, only 6% of all of the soy produced is straight for human consumption. And that is almost 100% non-GMO. So even if you were concerned about that, it's a non-issue. I actually don't know that I've seen a soy product that doesn't explicitly state non-GMO on it, to be honest, if I think about it. So again, that's not an issue either. There just really is an argument. There is no argument there for limiting soy consumption.
I like that everything that you mentioned, there's like research and there's evidence behind it. It's not just thrown up in the air, which I feel like is very, helps just kind of solidify that the truth behind these myths.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I love that you shared all of that. It will be something to kind of wrap your head around if it's, the first time you hear it. But I think that's awesome that you were able to break things down like that.
And can I add to that? So if someone is having a tough time, because this is going to be verbal, obviously, it's hard to follow. I have posts on most of these topics already on my like social media and everything, which we can link at the end. But the one that I haven't hit yet is protein, because there's so much to talk about. And so I will eventually probably make like 5 posts on it or something. But the other ones I've already hit. And so if you need to get a refresher, you can always go there.
Awesome. Yeah, I will definitely link your Instagram and your website also in the show notes. So guys, if you want to get more info and actually read it to be able to process it a little better, check out the show notes. I will leave his Instagram there. But it was definitely eye-opening and interesting to kind of hear that side of it. So thanks for sharing that. So Matt, so we've learned kind of about the myths and we learned how to get informed and things like that. Now, with your experience, where would you guide someone that's looking to begin healing kind of a chronic illness such as eczema? Where should they begin?
So I'm going to answer that in 2 parts, because I feel like eczema should be almost its own topic there. But let's say we're talking about just someone who wants to adopt a plant-based diet, period, whether it be for prevention of like cardiovascular disease or diabetes or just to get healthier. I personally, I do think it can be beneficial to work with a professional in the field who can really guide you in making those changes. What I often do with patients is I'll go over what their current diet looks like. We'll, look at it. And sometimes you can make really simple changes. Like say somebody eats, your plain, white pasta with beef sauce or something. I mean, well, you make it whole wheat noodles and you change it to tomato sauce and maybe throw some veggies in there, some lentils or something, and you're set. And we can go through the specifics of all of that. And so you can make these kind of small transitions. Other times you need a complete overhaul. And when you need to make a huge overhaul, I actually don't know that it's best to jump all in right away. I find that can be more difficult. I would start with one meal, right? Start with, okay, let's get your breakfast down. Here are like 3, 4, 5 different ideas you can try out. Try them for a few weeks and we'll see how you're doing. Once we've nailed those, we'll move on to the next. And I think that sort of approach for someone who is really changing up their diet is just more sustainable and more likely to lead to positive results. And the same thing, I would lead them to those references we mentioned earlier. The resources, the nutrition facts and the 21-day vegan kickstart and that. As well as just making sure they are supplementing their vitamin B12 and if they live in Canada, like I do, vitamin D, depending on how much sun you get. So that's that. Now with eczema, it's a bit more challenging. So theoretically, a plant-based diet should be beneficial on the fact that it's anti-inflammatory. And there are some studies suggesting that a vegetarian style diet does reduce risk of eczema, or reduce severity. But it goes beyond that because it can be triggered by specific food allergies and food sensitivities in that sense. There are elimination diet trials. There are studies where they actually do elimination diets and they'll eliminate either just eggs or they'll eliminate eggs and dairy. But these are usually in people who we know have an allergy or sensitivity to that specific food. Is that going to be necessary for everybody? I mean, I can't make that claim. Just because we don't really know, but what the ideal way to go about like food allergies or sensitivities, other than you can test for food allergies, but they aren't honestly the best tests out there. The best way to do it is a food elimination. So again, working with a professional, because I don't want you doing a whole elimination diet on your own. You eliminate all of the common allergenic foods. These are going to be your fish, eggs, dairy. It can even be your wheat and your soy and that, just temporarily. This isn't long term, and you eliminate these temporarily. And then after you've done it for several weeks, then you start challenging them back in one at a time. And so you'll do a few days where you just bring tofu back into your diet or soy back into your diet. Do you react to it? If you don't react to it, great. That's a part of your diet again. You can include it. And then, the next week or whatever, you can move on to the next food. And then you do those one at a time until you can tease out which ones cause a flare, which ones don't. That is probably the best way to go about it. But again, that is something I would want you to do with a professional, not necessarily just on your own.
You shared some really interesting things there. So I love that you mentioned, you know, maybe one meal at a time is a better option for you, yeah, instead of just, you know, cold turkey. Changing everything can be quite overwhelming. And food elimination with a professional. A lot of times we think we have to do it on our own, that there's no one out there, but, you know, there are people that are dedicated to helping us figure out these kind of triggers that we have.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is, because these can, like, if you're doing an elimination, it can be a, you know, few months even before you're back to your standard diet. So just to make sure you're, you know, doing your due diligence, when you're eliminating all these foods, that you're still getting all your nutrition, I'd just rather you follow up with a professional on that.
That's great. Thanks for sharing that, Matt. Everything that you've shared has been really helpful. And I think we'll definitely be beneficial for anyone trying to heal from the inside out. So now we're going to jump into a little fun lightning round of the podcast where I just ask you some simple questions and you answer the first thing that pops into mind. Okay.
Okay.
All right. All righty, Matt. So what is your favorite quote?
Oh, Bruce Lee. So I don't know how this pertains to my life at all, really, but I believe it was Bruce Lee who said, the key to immortality is first living a life worth remembering. I really like that one. I'm pretty sure that was Bruce Lee. That one kind of sticks out.
Very cool.
No, I have an AC/DC quote too, but that's separate.
Well, we have to hear the AC/DC. Okay. We've heard a lot about them.
this was years ago, but you know, people make jokes about how their music sounds very similar because they have a similar style, that, you know, their songs are just hard rock. And so, you know, someone criticized them of making the same album over and over. And so Angus Young, the guitarist, said, you know, people say we've made the same album 13 times, but actually they're lying. We've done it 12 times or something like that. Like, he just makes a joke about himself.
I like it. Yeah. That's good. Awesome. Matt, all right. What about, who is one person that's been most influential to you while on this journey?
I would say someone who, as far as the plant-based, besides my trainer, who I've already mentioned, who got me into it, as far as plant-based nutrition and learning about it and wanting to learn about it, it would have to be probably Dr. Michael Greger of nutritionfacts.org. And while I may not always agree with everything he suggests either, he definitely is the one that first got me into it and wanting to do that kind of deep dive.
Awesome. I he has a book, right?
Yeah, he has a couple of books. He has How Not to Die, which came out a few years back, about the leading causes of death and how diet can play a role. And then How Not to Diet is the most recent one, which is all about evidence-based weight loss. And then his next one is going to be called How Not to Age. So, oh no. And then this year he came out with How to Survive a Pandemic, because prior to his nutrition work, he actually worked in infectious disease. That was his main. He defended Oprah in the Mad Cow trial and all of that. So he's definitely an expert in the world of infectious disease.
Very interesting. I didn't realize he had that many books. I got to look into that one now. Awesome. All righty, Matt. And last question for you. What does healing mean to you?
Healing is an ongoing process. It's not like you're never just healed. I feel like everybody can work on something. Everyone can always, you know, has something to improve. And day to day, we are always causing injury to ourselves, whether that be on a cellular level with, you know, oxidation and that, or whether we're you know, actually physically injuring ourselves. And these are things that our bodies take care of. They're, you know, incredible machines. And in order for our bodies to actually take care of this and to heal and to make sure that we're running, you know, properly for the next day, we need to do our maintenance on it, like you would do with the car. We need to make sure we're, you know, providing it with the proper fuel as well. And so that fuel comes in the form of a healthy, you know, balanced plant-based or plant-predominant diet. And then making sure that when you do run into an issue, that you see a medical professional or a healthcare professional for it, just as you would take your car to the mechanic.
I love the car reference. Anytime that someone can give me a picture to to keep in my mind, it always sticks, and I always understand it so much easier. Awesome, Matt. You have been so helpful and so informative. I genuinely appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to be here with us and just help us get one step closer to healing. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. Thanks for spreading the word.
Of course. Thank you. Thank you, Healing Nation, for tuning into today's podcast. I want to remind you about the eczema cream Glad Skin that I was raving about earlier. This non-prescription eczema lotion has been so great, but not just for me, for my entire family. I even used it on my kids, Lucas and Leah, and I saw an improvement in their dry and red eczema within days. Glad Skin is so safe to use on children that in an interview that I had with the president, Skyler Stein, he went as far as saying that you could use it on an infant's eyelids. He left me shocked and speechless when I heard this. What I also love about Gladskin is it's hypoallergenic, it's free of steroids, free of fragrances, free of drying alcohols, and to top it off, it is preservative-free. And I didn't know this, so I want to share it with you, but preservatives kill the good bacteria on our skin, which are critical for skin health. So if you or anyone you know has eczema, I highly recommend you get a bottle of Gladskin. Simply go to gladskin.com to get yours now. Once again, that's gladskin.com. You will not regret it. Thanks again for tuning in, and I will see you on the next episode.